Okay, welcome back, everybody. We are going to talk about release management architecture. I've got a few slides. I promise no death by PowerPoint today. We're mainly going to be in the tool, out in the cloud, walking around in the VMs. But I do have a few slides I want to use to set the table here.
And it's going to be demo time, right, after that?
Yeah, I'll finally turn it over to you for some demos, and then I'll go kind of get a beer somewhere. So we're going to go ahead and overview deploying release management. And when I say that, implementing or installing a release management for Team Foundation Server, there's quite a bit of steps here currently. Now, I want everybody to keep in mind, this is likely to evolve as we integrate it more and more into the product. Again, we purchased this from, we announced it last summer. It's going to continue to evolve, but there's quite a few things to talk about here. So I think there's a lot of value in if you're working with customers or if you are a customer that's implementing this, you're a consultant, you're somebody out there that's doing implementations of release management, or even if you just work with the product, you need to know where all the bits are, what are the moving parts. So we'll go over all that. And then we're going to get into really how it works. So we're going to talk about, how does this tool work? Because knowing that is half the battle in figuring out when something goes wrong, and we're not into any kind of happy path here today. This is real bits that are going to break. We're going to break some on purpose. Some are probably going to break not on purpose from our experience. That's just the nature of the beast because there's so many moving parts. So we'll look at that. So architecture itself, let's just get a real good high level view of what this thing even is. So, at the very high level, we talked about, you've got Team Foundation Server here at the bottom left of my PowerPoint deck here. And I've got a drop location. Now, it's very important to note that you don't have to have TFS involved, as we talked about in the last module, but we're going to kind of assume you do. And we're going to rely on the build system to produce our outputs. Now, I didn't say much about it in the previous module, but one of the things is you always want to originate your releases from a build system somewhere that creates outputs. At least into your upstream environments closer to production. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is, don't be the guy that deploys from your machine. I don't want to deploy from Bob's machine, no offense to Bob, who we kind of trust and he's the blessed machine, because I don't know if that's in version control right at the end of the day. So I want to use a build system because I know that then at least the sources came from version control. We create outputs from that, and then we'll eventually deploy those. So that's very important. Now, you would think that not everybody's doing, most people get that by now, but there are still places in the world, to be unnamed, that are doing deployments from local devs' machines, and that's just nasty. You don't know what's on a developer's machine, right? I mean, back when I was a developer, I joke around, I had lots of Jessica Simpson stuff, all kinds of crazy stuff on my machine. You wouldn't trust the releases that were happening coming from my machine. No offense to Jess, right? We love her. So, okay. So, we're going to use a build system. We're going to use a drop location, and we're going to use release manager. It's going to look at that for the payload, and then we're going to deliver that payload somewhere. Very high level. We have a client that we're going to use. We're going to be in that client a lot to work with the system. And we also have a web client, which we can do some work with the system. But that server, that release management server sits there, Krithika, and that's very important. And that server's comprised of a few different things, right?
Yeah, it's just a combination of web and Windows services, really.
Okay, so you've got web and Windows services sitting there, monitoring things, doing work, and it's going to be kind of the center of operations. All that data being stored in SQL Server on the back end as well, by the way. But the architecture kind of similar to TFS, really. Web, Windows services, pulling data in and out of SQL, as we'll see. And then I've got the very important, if we think about it, so you have clients, you have a server for release management, we're relying on TFS at some level. We've also got the very important agent, the deployment agents, or the deployers, you may hear them being called. And these are important. So these are where you're going to install out in your environments where you intend to deploy to. So imagine you have a test web server or a set of IIS web servers. You'll install deployment agents out there that'll handle the deployments for this model. So, and what we'll find is it's a pull model from the deployment agent out into the release management server. It's going to basically be looking out in the server and saying, hey, do you have anything for me? You have anything for me? So we're going to kind of protect those environments in terms of firewall and all that kind of stuff. We won't have to punch a bunch of holes out into your deployment agents. It's going to be a pull model from the agent to the release management server. Now we'll look at, I said, late in the day about multiple domain scenarios and all that kind of stuff as well. So again, wrap that up, very high level. You've got a client for release management. We're going to be in it all day. You've got a server, which is a set of services in SQL Server, like any number of applications that you have today. And then you have deployment agents. And again, it could be SQL Server where I want to deploy to, could be web server, could be just some location somewhere. And that's where you're going to install deployment agents. And then consequently, by the way, there's some licensing stuff. I don't know, do you want to mention that?
Sure, yeah. So with licensing, to be able to install release management client, you need an MSDN license. It's going to come with Premium, Ultimate, or Test Professional.
So not just Ultimate, some other SKUs are giving me access to the client.
Exactly.
Okay.
And for the deployment agent, that's really where the money is, if you think about it. You're going to have to pay for the deployment agent. And there are two options available.
It's all on sale, though, Karthika, so I don't know why you're bringing that up. But, okay.
So you have Standard and Data Center for the deployment agent. So those are the two options available.
Okay, so you're going to be relicensing agents, and you say where the money is. So the more agents you can think of, and again, we're not your licensing experts. See the website's public documentation for this. Your volume discounts are all in play, all this kind of thing, right? So, but the deployment agents, the more of them you have, and theoretically, the more you'll license, right? So if I want to deploy to two things, it's one kind of licensing thing I'm dealing with. If I want to deploy to 100, it's a different animal. So just keep that in mind. We won't talk. We're not worried about licensing here today. Your MSDN subscriptions and all that, if you have Ultimate, can come with like a free standard deployment agent. There's this kind of nuances you can look at on the website for visualstudio.com. So, all right, we kind of get the big picture of the architecture. Let's talk a little bit about, again, how it works. And I think hopefully this will start to come into clarity as you show the demos as well. So, again, RM server right there, that release management server sits there. You have two clients that will talk to that server. You've got a web client and a browser, and we can do things like approve releases. You've got a FAT client today. Oh, we don't want that. What happened there? We don't want OneDrive. Okay. Casually ignore that. AKA SkyDrive nightmare, right? So what happens is, we have the two clients will talk to the server. The server wants to say, hey, where's the drop location, right? You have some options for there. You don't necessarily have to have access to the drop location from the agents. The server can come into play too. We'll talk about that as we do the demos, right? But you have a drop location where you're creating output. In our case, it's going to be originating in Team Foundation server. And then eventually we're going to deploy that to those deployment agents. And those deployment agents, again, are going to, don't let the arrows confuse you. The deployment agents are going to look for deployments that might be ready up in the servers and grab those. And they'll be doing other things like grabbing whatever tools they need to actually do the deployment. And we're going to see permissions issues. We're going to see all kinds of things that you run into when you're doing anything on operating systems, right, or software. You're going to run into this kind of stuff. And we'll show you that today as we go.
Sounds good.
Okay. So I'm going to turn it over to you and show me how I would deploy release management if I didn't have anything to get started. So I'll turn it over to my friend Karthika here.
I am in my VM right now, the one that we have set up for the demo here. And let's take a look at a few things before I get started with the installation itself. I want to quickly take a look at the users that we have set up already for this machine.
There's right? Bob right there, I see.
There's Bob here. Bob is an admin. And we have a user for me, Karthika, and one for you, Mike, right?
I doubt I'm an admin, right? I'm probably.
I trust you. I made you an admin.
Okay.
So we have these different accounts that we created exclusively for release management, right? So you see there's an account for RM agent, which we'll be using when we install the deployment agent. There's an account for RM server. We're really trying to keep things separate here, right? We don't really want to use the service account that Team Foundation servers using or anything.
Okay.
We want to use these accounts that we exclusively set up for release management.
Okay, so I see. So what we're doing here, in our case, we don't, again, we're not using a domain yet. We've got multiple accounts, and they're all on the same box, really, because we're in our single VM setup. But I see you've got Team Foundation Service. Now, we took a few shortcuts. I think we may also have that as running the build agent, but that's that, which technically wouldn't be a best practice. But what we're saying is what you need to do is have multiple accounts that are very narrowly focused in what they do as a best practice for security reasons. Give them accounts the least amount of privileges they need, and we'll see this come into play here in a moment, right, when we talk about the account you'll use with
the installation, right?
Okay.
So specifically, you would be needing three accounts, one for the server, RM server. So this is the account that the Windows services are going to be using. They're going to be running as RM server account. And then you'll have one for the agent, RM agent. So you're going to be using the RM agent account.
That's our deployer kind of thing.
Deployment agent, exactly. And then you also see that we have an RM TFS int account in here. So we spoke about how release management integrates with Team Foundation server, right? So you will be using RM TFS int for the integration piece of it, and we'll be showing the permissions that you will need to get that going.
Okay, so and you arbitrarily named that as, I get it, release management TFS int for integration.
Yep.
But that's just going to be so you can connect your release management server to TFS.
Yeah. Release management server can talk to Team Foundation
server.
Okay,
got it. Yep.
Right. So we'll be taking a look at every single one of them here. So there's nothing fancy going on with these accounts here. If I just right click on them and do a properties, you'll see that it's just a member of users for now.
Okay. So you're not adding them like all as admin. See, when I do my installs, I add everybody as administrator.
You don't want
to
do that, right?
To fight anything.
Exactly. So that defeats the whole purpose of even setting up these accounts, right? So you don't want to give them all kinds of permissions if it's not even needed.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, I was kind of joking, but yeah.
So you see that we have these three accounts. So let me go in and show you where I got the installation bits from. So you see that I'm out here. In the download center here. So I just grabbed the bits from Release Management Visual Studio. You see that update to RC just released.
Oh, you're going to do release candidate.
You got
Wonderful.
It.
You're not afraid. I love it.
So this is where I got the bits from. And I have it downloaded here.
Beta
locally.
Software Live TV. That's smart. Yeah. Perfect. Not beta. I'm joking. Brian Harry, I'm just teasing.
Okay. So I have these downloads here. Set up already. So you see that, like Mike mentioned, we have three components that we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at the server, we'll be looking at the client, and we'll also be installing the deployment agent.
Okay, right. So those three things we looked at in the architecture deck, there are three separate installs, and that's important. Now, obviously, keep an eye on this as it evolves, you know, over time as we do our next release and all of this, but right now you're doing three separate installations to work with this product. So that's kind of and we want to show that.
Yeah, it's a separate installation from Team Foundation server.
Perfect.
Yep. So let's go ahead and fire up my RM server update 2 installation. And you'll get here. I just have it fired up already to save some time here.
Oh, magic, nice.
All I really have to do, I mean, the installation experience itself, it's pretty seamless. It's just a bunch of mouse clicks. There's not going to be a whole lot to it with installation. So let me go ahead and agree to the license terms. And then at this point in time, I should be able to install. And this will probably take just a few minutes here. Again, it's really a server client model you're talking about. So this is basically installing release management server for me.
Okay, and then you're going to then be into like a configuration experience where you're going to create everything.
Exactly. I mean, we set up those accounts, right? I mean, we're going to have to use them at some point.
Okay.
And we'll be doing that after this finishes. Yep.
Okay. So, and if I had, I guess, a lot of different servers out there where I was going to eventually want to do deployments to, I could in parallel go out there on the mother servers and start to install deployment agents. Obviously, I couldn't configure them.
Yeah, because it wouldn't have anything to talk to, right?
You wouldn't be configuring until you're done, but I could start the process or get the software on them or something
right.
like that. Okay,
right.
Got it. Mm-hmm.
So this shouldn't take too long here.
Okay. I'm not sure what you're... Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm just
so you're
waiting
still it's still acquiring
it's,
everything.
It's still acquiring it. It's still applying it.
Okay. Now, so when this ends up getting done, I guess to reiterate, what we're going to end up having is you're going to configure a SQL database. I'm going to have stuff in IIS, I'm assuming.
We'll see that when it configures. It's going to go ahead and create a database called release management in SQL.
Okay, so if I go look in SQL Server, I'll end up with a release management database. So just like in TFS, where if I have a collection... I'm going to back that up. I also then probably need to have this as part of some disaster recovery plan. And
you got it.
It could be part of an availability group if I'm using 2012.
Right. It's going to contain information on release management users, the templates that you would be defining,
okay.
the pipeline, all kinds of
So we want to treat it as a thing
release.
That we want to protect.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the one other thing that I want to point out real quick here is you see that I'm logged in as Bob. And like I mentioned, Bob is an admin on the box.
Yep.
And we used Bob for installing all our software, right, for Team Foundation Server. We used Bob for SharePoint Foundation, pretty much for the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. And we could have used an account called Setup or anything we want.
Yeah. To be able to install release management, you have to be an admin, and you also have to have sysadmin permissions on SQL, right?
Yeah.
Because it's
going to
be creating a new database in SQL.
Okay. So just like we're installing any other software, we've got to have a big hammer and with a set of permissions to go ahead and get the install done. You chose to, there'll be a guy or a blessed account that we use to do that, and we kind of know he has access
just
to everything.
Just for installing all the software, yeah.
Got it, yep.
So let's go ahead and launch this. As you saw, I mean, it was just a bunch of mouse clicks here.
Okay.
It's asking me to configure release management server, and this is where we would be using the account that we exclusively set up for RM server.
Okay.
Right? So we spoke about how release management server is nothing but a combination of Windows and web services, right? So the account that you specify here, those services are going to be running as this identity here.
Okay.
So let me go ahead and plug in my server account. and the password for my server account. Just do a test real quick. Looks good.
Yep.
And by default, it's going to create an app pool, right? So it's going to go ahead and create it in port number 1000. So I'm fine with that. So I'm just going to go with that. And it's asking me for the database server, right? So we spoke about how it creates a database in SQL, which we'll be taking a look at after I
so you're
after
just,
I
you're
get
just
this
pointing,
done.
You're point, going to point to some database server that Bob has access to,
has
test
admin
it out.
Base.
It looks
yep.
good to go. And I noticed that, I don't know if you can zoom in there real quick. Do you have Zoom it running? I don't even know if you do. There you go. So that SSL there. So just keep in mind, if you're in an organization that needs to use HTTPS, you don't want your web stuff running over port 1000, you want to expose it maybe, you have ability to do that
you
there.
You have right? that option available.
Okay.
Yep. So let's go ahead and apply settings.
Okay.
And there you go, our first error, right?
Okay. And so this was a planned error or a non-planned error? Keep me.
This is a planned error,
okay.
Yeah.
Yours are, mine are. Okay, go ahead.
So it's telling me that the account that I specified here, it's not an admin.
Ah, so here we get into one of the heavy permissions we need.
Exactly. You saw that we had those users set up as just users. They didn't really belong to any groups,
yes.
right? So now we're going to have to go in and fix that. Again, we want to show you all the errors that you would typically see with the installation and also show you how to work around them, right? How to resolve them. So that's the whole point of doing this demo even.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and fix that. So I'm going to just go ahead and close this and go back to my users again.
Okay, so then you might be asking somebody in AD to give, I'm going to need like a pretty heavy permission there currently. The RM server itself is going to need, he's going to be doing some heavy things. He's going to need administration or be an administrator on this particular box. Now, I think this brings up an important point. I'll let you go ahead and fix that. This is a good reason, right? I don't want maybe a single server with everything on it. I may have a dedicated machine that's only for RM server. Then I can put that account there and I feel better about it.
Exactly.
I isolated that account on that one server, that all his purpose in life was RM. It wasn't also my SharePoint server. It wasn't also my reporting services server. So
right.
it's a good reason to kind of have a dedicated
so
machine.
So in this case, I mean, we're just using one machine for all of it.
Got it, okay.
So let's just go ahead and try this again. And you see that, I mean, I don't see that error anymore. I mean, that was a pretty descriptive error, right? I mean, it told
that
me exactly.
That was the easiest one. I know,
right?
See, right?
Yeah, so typically that's not the case. So so you see that it validated my account. It's creating, it's validating the database server and instance. It's making sure that Bob has the permissions to create the database, which
yeah.
I think it's doing it right now as we speak here. And you'll see as soon as this completes, I want to quickly go into SQL and show you the database that gets created as part of this whole installation process.
Okay, so you'll show us that there really is a database. Perfect.
Right. Let me also fire up IIS. Because it's also going to go ahead and create an app pool for me, which we'll be talking about in a second here. I know Mike mentioned something about this web client that you get that typically project
right.
managers or other non-developer role would be using to approve, reject, or reassign releases.
Yeah, and so we'll get you'll get not only an app pool, you'll get a website here,
exactly.
And a set of services. And we'll keep in mind as you go to, and we'll talk about this later in the day, as you're troubleshooting things, you're talking about SQL Server. So if something's wrong in SQL, going to have a problem here with the tool. If something's wrong in IIS,
right.
going to have a problem with the tool. So these are the places you can go to kind of troubleshoot. Going to see things in Event Viewer. We're going to see things inside of like IIS logs. I know that I was troubleshooting something. I turned on failed request tracing to see mm-hmm. the failed requests that are happening. So if you have skills in those areas as an admin on this kind of thing, those will serve you well. You're dealing with IIS and SQL at the end of the day.
So it looks like it's doing stuff now. So let me go ahead and minimize my management studio here for a second. So you see that it created my database. It went ahead and created the web service. It's configuring the Windows service. Again, it's just a combination of web and Windows services. We'll be taking a look at services in a second here to show them running, right?
So keep in mind, everybody, that I guess you're seeing the installation in real time here. It's taken a little bit longer maybe than it
usual.
Did in some
yeah.
of our demos, but it's getting done. So this isn't like a press the button and go away an hour kind of thing. It's really happening in real time here.
It's pretty seamless.
Pretty fast to get it configured. And okay.
So it looks like the configuration succeeded. So I want to show you a few things here before we get into the installation of the client itself, right? So let's just go ahead and close this. So we want to check a few things here. The first thing is I want to take a look at the database that got created.
Okay.
So you see there's a release management database. So if I was to do a properties on it, you'll see that, again, I'm logged in as Bob. So you see that Bob becomes the owner of the release management and database. So it's always a good thing to have a an account exclusively for installation purposes.
Okay.
So let's just go ahead and cancel out of here, minimize it. And the next thing that I want to show you is the app pool and the site that got created. Let me do a refresh here. Let's just go into the app
pool. Surely you don't have to refresh an IIS to see stuff. Auto refresh, right?
No. So you see that it created a release management app pool in here for me.
Okay.
And if I was to just do a refresh, you'll see a release management site that got created, which we'll be taking a look at when we go into approving or assigning, reassigning.
Could you zoom in on the app pool's identity? Who's it running as? It's not running as Bob or something goofy, right?
Yeah, so let's just go ahead and zoom it. Remember that account that we created?
Okay.
Atom server account? So this is the identity that's being used here.
But you expect that, yep.
Yeah,
okay.
So that was expected. So we looked at IIS, we looked at SQL.
Yep.
So the next thing to do would be to install the client.
Okay, let's install the client.
Let's go ahead and do that. So the client is really just a WPF application, right? I mean, typically you use the client for one of three different reasons. I mean, you go in there to configure release management server for some of the first-time configuration and settings. You also go in there to build your release pipeline to really define your release template and also kick off releases.
Okay.
So that's going to be the third reason why you would even be there.
Okay.
So let's just go ahead and run this RM client update 2. And let's see what that does for us.
So we're installing right now the update 2 version of the client, the server, and the agent. I think it's important to point out that these are three separate installs. And what I've run into, and I've seen it at a customer site, as well as one of my customers, as well as in our lab, is keep in mind that, you know, I think as a best practice, you like to keep all those in sync. I mean, I've had a situation where I was on update 2 of the client and the older version of the server.
Yep.
Interestingly enough, some of the combinations of server, agent, and client will work. Some of them will hide little issues from you. So I don't know if we have this documented yet or it's out there publicly, but I like to know the different versions I'm on and making sure I'm staying in sync. And I know we'll talk about upgrading the trial version and all that here in a little while.
There's going to be some information available in the settings view.
Okay.
It's going to tell you the version that you're running, so you want to make sure that the versions match. So we'll take a look at that too. So.
Okay.
Again, there's obviously, I mean, you install the server first and then the client and then the deployment agent, right? Because without the server, you don't have anything to talk to. So let me go ahead and launch the application now that my client installed, and that didn't take too long at all.
That's quick.
Yep. So all it's really asking me here is asking me for the server that has release management installed, right? So in this case, it would be the same VM that I'm using here right now. So let me go ahead and plug in the name here, ALM Data 1.
Okay.
And I'm using the default port, so I should be good here, right? And let's see if this is going to work.
Okay, I expect it to work. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And this is not the same as your other error that you saw, right? That was really descriptive. I mean, that told me exactly what I needed to fix to get it going.
Uh-huh.
This is just telling me that it cannot reach the server. It's really an unavailable error, right? I mean, it's telling me that the server is unavailable for some reason.
Even though that you installed the server, everything was green.
It's all on the same box. Yeah, I didn't say anything. It didn't really complain about anything. So we did quite a bit of research on this issue here and found that if you have SharePoint Foundation 2013 installed on the box where you have release management configured or when you're trying to release or install it on the same box as SharePoint Foundation 2013, you're going to see a weird thing happening. And there's a workaround that's available, and it's really nicely documented online. So I want to quickly pull up that link and show you the issue and the documentation that came with it. So let's just go ahead and open that up here.
And so to be clear, what we're saying is if you happen to have, because we're all on the same box, we have Release Management Server and SharePoint on the same box.
SharePoint Foundation.
At least SharePoint Foundation, who knows what other version of SharePoint, but you could run into something here. So single server scenario, we're going to run into this.
I know you've always not been a big fan of SharePoint, so.
I wouldn't say I'm not a fan of SharePoint. If you're not live, I wouldn't say that. No way. I love SharePoint.
So let's go ahead and show you the error. So it basically the service unavailable error. It's nicely documented here. And the nice thing about this blog is it tells me exactly what needs to be done to fix it.
Okay. So you said we did a lot of research on the fix. You meant you did a lot of research. She, not we. but you found that we had some 503s you were seeing in the event viewer and things like that.
Yeah, so let's just go ahead and open up the event viewer real quick, just show you what I'm talking about it. You see that it's going to start filling up with error logs in here.
Throughout the day. So EventViewer, viewer is your friend. So, you know, obviously if you're working with anything, you know, troubleshooting lots of things, EventViewer is your friend. There's your error. You see that you end up, if you dig through the details there.
Again, nothing is jumping out at me, telling me that it's really something that has to do with SharePoint.
But we do see a 503 at least.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So that's a good start, right?
Yep.
So let's just go ahead and minimize it. And I'm going to go ahead and follow this right here, right? I'm just going to go ahead and navigate to this path. Copy.
And I think, you know, I looked at this a little bit deeper and then quickly started, like, getting a headache. But what it gets down to, it's something weird with 32-bit, 64-bit. We won't even worry about it. SharePoint problem. And I'm sure there's a real good reason why. But it's a one-liner here to get it fixed is what you're showing us.
Exactly. And this should do the trick, hopefully. So it looks like it's done.
Yep.
And I'm going to go ahead and just be safe and do an IIS reset.
Okay.
And let IIS restart here after it stops.
Yep, so you just add an admin command prompt in your...
Yeah, just to be safe, right? I mean, this may or may not work with that IIS reset, but we'll just be safe here. And looks like it restarted. So I'm going to go ahead and try this again.
Okay, so you didn't do anything on the client in terms of relaunching. You just hit OK.
Nothing, because I'm still connecting to the same server, the same port, and you see that it configured.
Okay.
Right.
So that was nice.
So at this point, I'm done installing the client. I haven't really done any of the configuration, like the first-time configuration that I was talking about earlier, that needs to be done to get this whole thing going even.
Okay. And so we've installed two-thirds of the equation. You've installed the server, ran into a permissions issue there, no biggie. We installed the client, wants to connect to the server. That was a little nastier, and you'd only saw it seemingly if you're on a single server kind of setup.
Yep.
And now you have the deployment agent you're going to...
You got it. So let's go ahead and install the deployment agent before we configure any of this stuff.
Okay.
So let me go ahead and double-click and run this. Again, I mean, the installation process itself, I mean, it's really seamless, right? It's just a bunch of mouse clicks. I mean, as long as you have those permissions straightened out, as long as you have the SharePoint issue, I mean, again, if you're doing a one-box installation, as long as all of that is done, it should be a fairly easy install.
We'll show at the end of the day how it's not so easy to install the agents when they're not in the same box, but not just that. They're in domains that don't trust each other and that kind of thing. And we'll play games with ghosts. I can't wait.
I know, me neither.
Okay.
So let's just go ahead and launch this. That was a really quick install, right? I mean, it took less than a minute.
Love it.
And the only thing that it's asking me here, it's asking me for the agent service account. And remember, we set up a service account exclusively for a deployment agent, right?
Super important here. Super important. So when you set up your agents, right, they are going to be running as an identity. And if you think about the agents, think of them as your heavy hitter, the one that's doing the actual installations on your nodes. So it's your deployer, the one who's doing the deployments. He's installing the software, kind of like a setup account. You're going to want a dedicated account for that for sure, not local system, something like that. You're going to want to control that account to resources. I'm meaning, I may want to eventually show how to, we'll install like to a database. We'll want to give him permissions depending what he needs to do in the database and control those permissions. So controlling who the deployment agent is a best practice, because then I can limit or maybe give him more permissions. I don't want to give it like a user account that somebody else uses that would have access to.
Right.
I don't want to be like, you know, just necessarily network service or something like that either.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. So let me go ahead and type in the agent account. And then the password. Do a test real quick. Should be green. And connect to the release management server. Again, I mean, if you don't have release management installed or anything, I mean, you can't really talk to it, right? So again, want to go server, client, and then the deployment agent.
Okay, so you're telling the agent, hey, this is where the server lives.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I'm using the default port. So let me go ahead and apply settings. And you see that it's validating the account, and then it's going to obviously configure deployment agent service, which is what we're going to be looking at next.
Okay.
What I want to do is I want to go ahead and just fire up my services here.
And that was fast as well, I saw it. Just happened. Okay.
And I want to show a few things. The first thing we did was we installed the server, right? So let's just go ahead and take a look at the release management monitor service.
Okay.
And you see that it's running as Atom server.
Yep.
Right? The next thing that I want to show is the agent itself. You'll see Microsoft Deployment Agent. Again, it's just a Windows service at this point, right? And you see that it's running as Atom agent.
Yeah. Yeah, so, okay, and in this case, they're obviously on the same box, and we're doing, you know, our single server thing, but the agent itself could be and will be most likely on another machine, wherever the deployment's going to be going to eventually. I like that word monitor for the release management server, because that's what it's going to do. It's going to monitor for deployments that get kicked off. And also the agent, I want to point out, there's really two threads happening with the agent. One is it's going to send a heartbeat periodically to the actual release management server to say, hey, I'm available, I'm alive, I'm here. And also it's going to say, hey, do you have anything for me to do? Is there any work for me to do? Again, where the agent's at is going to talk out to the server itself. So agent will need access out to the server, but where the agent's at, we won't need to poke a bunch of holes in the firewall or something, because it's not like things are getting pushed to it. Right. It's more of a pull thing, like it's grabbing something and pulling it down.
And like you said, there's going to be multiple servers for different environments, right? Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have the agent installed on every single one of them.
Yeah, okay.
So let's just go ahead and close this. So now that we're done with the installation, I kind of want to show you some of the first-time configuration. There's some first-time configuration involved with release management server that you would be doing in the client, right? Like I said, with the client, I mean, you're in the client for configuring release management, or you're there for creating your release pipeline, your release template, or you're there to kick off a release, right? So those are the three reasons
why you're in that initial configuration stage is where we're at right now.
Exactly. So I'm going to go ahead and looks like it's open. So I'm going to go ahead and open up my client here, maximize it. You see that there's nothing here in the releases tab, but what I want to show is the configure apps tab. And what you will see there is this nice checklist. So this is really going to walk me through the first time configuration that's needed to get this thing going, right? You see that some of the settings here are optional. I mean, as specified within brackets, there are a few settings that are optional. You don't really have to configure them. I mean, obviously it's a good thing to configure them, right, if you can. And you also see that there's a few settings in here that are in bold, which tells me that it's a required setting, right? So I can't really do anything if I don't define stage types, for example.
Okay.
Right.
So this is, you know, it's interesting. So you've got a 1, 2, 3, 4 checklist kind of thing. Some are optional, some are not. And they put that into the tool here, which tells me there's a lot of steps here.
There's a lot of steps.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And
otherwise, you don't have a checklist to go through, right? It's just like, it's more, okay.
Exactly. And you would see this checklist show up every now and then only when you have something that hasn't been configured yet, only if there's a prerequisite involved.
So you're going to help us configure it today, I'm hoping?
Yep. That's what we're going to do. And one other thing, I mean, there's also a few settings here that are grayed out, which means that I can't really do anything just yet because I'm missing these other steps. So let's just go ahead and walk through these different settings. The first thing that I want to start with is the SMTP server settings. So if I click on this link, all this is going to ask me is for the SMTP server configuration information. Again, if I want email notifications to go out, right, if somebody kicks off a release or something, I mean, if I want email notifications to go out, I can configure SMTP server.
Yeah, and I imagine, you know, we know that a lot of things are driven by email kind of workflows. So
exactly.
That makes sense that you obviously have an email story here, yeah.
Yeah, you just plug in the server name, port name, username, and password.
Okay.
Again, I'm not doing any of that right now.
Hey, real quick, and I don't mean to interrupt your flow, but on that bottom right, I think it's important. There's two links there.
I was going to do that too, yeah. So you see that there's a link for the release management server license information and for the client. If I just click on it, you see that I'm really working with trial software here.
Okay.
So it's going to expire in 90 days.
Okay. And we see this in the links down there in your client. Now, this is important, and I'll tell you why. So, and I've had also a couple experiences with this. Currently, the software, the SKUs are embedded inside the software for trial software, or if not, if you own the server, for example, outright based on your where you got the bits on your MSDN subscription or whatnot, that stuff's embedded, and there's no way to come at a trial with like a button click. You're not plugging in a product key, okay? So keep that in mind out there as you do this. So if you install trial, you're in trial mode, like on server, on client, but you can't come out of it with a button press and a product key. Now, luckily, it's not too terrible, but what you do find yourself doing is uninstalling the bits, which leaves behind the database. And I always cringe when I think about uninstalling, but it leave behind the database for me. Of course, I'll want a backup. And then reinstalling the non-trial bits that you acquire from someplace. So, you know, I'm not going to gloss over that. That's not maybe the most beautiful story we may have coming eventually. But there's a little work there. But just keep in mind, if you expire, you're kind of dead in the water for a few minutes. luckily, it doesn't take forever to uninstall and install this product, as you're demonstrating. So
right.
Just wanted to point that out to everybody.
And this notification would look a little different. I mean, if you have a product key applied already, it's just going to say that you have a product key applied.
Yeah, so if you'd installed the real bits, it tells you that the embedded product key was there. It's all good. It's just there's no place to type a product key.
Exactly. Before I move away from here, though, I just want to quickly show one more thing here. Remember we spoke about making sure that the versions are in sync?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So you see that there's a system version and the database version, and they match.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah, so you want to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you want to make sure they're in sync. Yeah. As mentioned before.
So the database. Yeah, we've seen situations where the database schema is at one version, and then the actual server, the services can, and the client can be at a different version, and this is and the agent even could be at a different version. Some of this stuff, like I said, plays together. Some of it won't. So
right.
Keeping all of these in sync will be the thing. And the agent gets upgraded. By the way, it'll get queued based on what the server's doing, and it'll want to do an update, and it'll kind of silently update for you. So there's some magic there that happens. But again, expect some of this stuff to evolve over time.
All right. So we looked at the SMTP and we looked at some other things here. So let me go back to the configure apps. We'll probably come back here again in a while. So SMTP is configured. You see that I can add a connection to Team Foundation Server. I mean, we've been saying over and over again that release management nicely integrates with Team Foundation Server. It can integrate with different instances of Team Foundation Server, different versions of Team Foundation Server even, right? So you can have multiple connections in place with release management talking to Team Foundation Server.
Okay, wait a minute. You just blew my mind a little bit here. So you're saying that I can have one release management server.
Right.
You're going to integrate it with TFS.
Yep.
Right? But I could integrate it with multiple TFS instances. On different versions of TFS.
Yep.
So then that would answer the question of, if I'm on update one of TFS out there, I don't have to keep TFS in up to date in the same product version as I do necessarily release management currently.
Right.
I could even be like 2010.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I would be setting up these different connections here in the TFS connections page. You'll see that you'll be really connecting to a team project collection. So we'll take a look at that in a second here.
Okay.
So at this point, I don't have any connection configured. So what I want to do is I want to click on new. Right, so it's asking me again for the server that has Team Foundation Server installed. In my case, it's going to be ALM Data 1. And it's asking me for a project collection name, right? So like I said earlier, you can potentially have multiple connections that are connecting to different team project collections.
Okay, so you're specifying the
same
collection.
Instance.
Gotcha.
Exactly. So you're really connecting to a team project collection here.
Yep.
So in my case, I think we use the default name here, Mike, right?
I don't remember.
You didn't rename it behind my back, did you?
I didn't. But I did notice as you're typing that, the TFS connection URL at the top, it's showing me.
It starts populating here at the bottom.
At the bottom and the top, yeah.
Exactly. So again, I'm just going with the defaults here. And this is going to be interesting. So you see that there's a connect as section. So this is really the integration piece, right? This is really the account that release management is going to be using to talk to Team Foundation Server. Again, if we looked at, I know we looked at the users that we created for a server here, you'll see that we created a release RMTFS int user, the one that we wanted to use for integration purposes.
Yep. So you got an account. You're going to use the connect to the systems together.
This one right here, right?
Yep.
So we're going to be using this account for release management to talk to Team Foundation Server.
Okay.
Again, there's nothing fancy going on here. It's just a member of users right now.
Got it.
So let me go back in here. And there are a few things that are going to happen here when I do that. Let me get the account name once again. RMTFS int. Or I can also do this, right? I'll probably just do this.
RMTFS int, yeah.
Data 1, RMTFS int. Do the check names. Looks good.
Okay.
And I'm going to type in the password. Again, RMTFS int is just a user. It doesn't have any permissions or anything to do with TFS just yet,
okay.
The account itself.
Not yet, okay.
So let's just go ahead and do a verify. Let's see what happens then. And I'm hoping to see an error, so.
You know how this is going,
right?
Yes, okay. Yeah. So you didn't do anything special to the account, and we're going to see, we see the error.
Because it can't even connect to Team Foundation Server, right? Because RMTFS int doesn't even exist on TFS.
Okay, yep, makes sense to me. So you need to create an account in, or you need to add an account to some place in TFS.
Yeah, so there are a couple different permissions involved here. You have to turn on this permission at the team project collection level, where the account can basically make requests to TFS.
make requests on behalf of others.
Exactly.
Okay. And there's several little permissions here that it might be needed depending what you're doing. At the build level, the build definition level.
At the team project level.
Team project level has some stuff. There's a blog post about that. So there's a couple ways to go, and you're going to show us one of the ways to go, I think.
Yeah. So one of the the easy way around this whole issue is adding RMTFS int.
Just put TFS service there?
Well, you can do that too, but I wouldn't do that.
Don't do that. I was joking. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's not do that. So we have this account set up already. So what I want to do here is I want to just make this account a part of the Team Project Collection Service Accounts group. So you have these different groups set up in Team Foundation Server, right?
Okay. Or Team Foundation Server service account groups, which is part, and then the collection accounts will get it. Is that
exactly? We can add it at the collection level or at the server level even.
Okay. So by putting it in the service accounts for TFS, what we'll end up seeing is that gives it everything it needs. There's some other service account lives there, and we're seeing that as kind of a common trend that's happening. I guess the hardcore in me would say, let's go hunt out those four or five permissions that it needs, create a custom group, and put them in there. But that is a little problematic with the way the current system's laid out, because we talked about you have to have team project permissions. You got to have collection level permissions. Build level kind of stuff's in play, retain indefinitely, I believe.
Right.
So when you have to have all of that, that might be a little bit more management than I want when I can just use the collection services account or the Team Foundation services account, it's fine.
Right.
We're protected.
For the purposes of what we're doing here, we'll just go ahead and add the user to the server service account.
Okay.
Right. And the one thing that you'll notice here is I can't really do it from within the admin console. It's kind of locked out. That group is kind of preserved.
Yeah, you're not letting people just add accounts willy-nilly here in the GUI.
This is the group that we're after, right? Team Foundation service accounts. Again, there's a workaround. You can run it from the command prompt, which is what we're going to be doing here, right? So we'll be using the TFS security command.
Okay.
So I'm going to go into my scripts here for a second and copy this that you see.
Okay. So just TFS security, running that from an elevated Visual Studio command prompt, and you're going to just dump that thing into the TFS service account.
So yeah, if you have multiple connections to different team project collections set up in TFS for release management,
you can just use that one account and
exactly,
get away with
just
it.
Be
okay.
Done with it. Yeah. All right. So I'm just going to go ahead and copy this. And
so depending on your lockdown needs, you could do a few different scenarios here, but this is one scenario. Okay.
Right. Let me open this up again. And I'm just going to go ahead and paste it. So I'm just given RMTFS int the required permissions.
Okay.
To make that integration happen, really.
And so that should show up then in the service accounts if you
right. It should say done at the bottom. Right? So it's done. So let me go in and go back into my client here. And I'm going to try this again. Right? Now that I have the permissions configured,
okay.
I can just do a verify again. And you'll see that it's green now. So
okay.
It's happy with the
buttons. So we can believe you that if I went and eyeballed the Team Foundation server services accounts, I would not just see TFS service, I would also see that account being there.
Exactly.
Okay.
So let's just go ahead and save and close.
Okay. So you've established a connection to TFS.
Yes, just this one Team Project Collection.
Okay.
That's all we have right now. So I'm going to go back to configure apps real quick before we wrap up this module. Just want to show you a few other things. We'll be doing a lot of adding users and groups later on in our demos here. But let's just quickly go ahead and click on the users link.
Okay.
You'll see that, before I do that, I just want to go back one more second here. You see that as I configure stuff, you see that check marks, they start appearing all over the place. It's just telling me that it's a done step.
Yep.
Right. Again, it helps me.
And so some of this is like one-time work, and then like that connection to TFS, that's a rare event probably. And then some of it you maybe go back to and tweak and do over and over again. So,
exactly.
Okay.
So let's just go ahead and look at a few other things before we wrap up this module. So I'm going to click on the users link. You see that it automatically added a few users for me already. You see
cool. There's
an admin, right? So let's just take a look at who that admin is. And that account belongs to Bob, who did the installation.
And admin is just a display name.
It's just the display name. So I'm going to go ahead and rename it. Call it
Bob.
To keep things simple here. And you see that since I used Bob to install Release Management Server made Bob a Release Manager. So think about Release Manager as a super user in Release Management Server. They have all kinds of admin permissions needed to make changes to settings, so on and so forth.
Okay, Release Manager is the magic account there, or the magic group there, okay.
Exactly, and it's not a service user. My service is running as a different user here. I can receive email notifications, stuff like that. So I'm just going to go ahead and close this. And I can add multiple users at this point, right? I'm going to go ahead and add you and add me as well. So you see that I can go ahead and simply add an account that has been set up already.
Okay.
ALM data one, Krithika, check names, should work. And I'm going to go ahead and it's asking me if I want to associate it with the Windows account, which I'm fine with. And it's asking me if I want to make myself a release manager. I'm sure going to do that. Go ahead and save this.
And I'm going to answer a question real quick from the online chat, which I've been kind of keeping an eye on the side here. Talked about, looks like configuring the TFS connection is required, but I thought you said earlier we don't need TFS for RM. So it's only required if we want to do some things with TFS, like we'll look at, we can bring in security groups from TFS because we have that connection. We can also integrate with the build system, which we'll do eventually. So it's required if you want to do certain things.
Yep. Since I have it configured now, you see that the optional thing went away. It was optional before.
You want to show real quick where the groups, where we can, when I talked about with the TFS.
Sure, yeah. So let me go ahead and take a look at the groups. So by default, you get this every one group. Think about it as the most permissive group in release management. We'll take a look at the permissions in a second here. So I'm just going to go ahead and open up everyone. You'll see that anybody that belongs to this group, which in this case is everybody at this point, right?
Okay.
They can go ahead and create release templates. I mean, they can do all kinds of stuff, right? So you want to lock this down as much as you can.
Okay, so right now everyone's getting everything by default, making our life easy, but in the real world, we're probably going to use additional groups and then and lock some of this stuff down.
Exactly, and we have a few options available as far as those groups go.
Okay.
So if you see that there's a new drop down here. And you see that I can create a new release management group. Again, that's really, this group would be specific to release management itself.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Or I can import from AD. If you have a group set up in AD already,
yeah.
I can go ahead and import that group into release management.
From Active Directory directly.
Exactly. What that would do is it would basically sync all the users that are a part of that AD group.
Uh-huh.
It would add them to release management.
Yep.
Right? It would also create an associated group in release management.
Okay, and then the third option was?
The third option, again, this is where TFS comes into play again, right? We spoke about how you can import groups from TFS. So when you have these different team projects created, you have different groups in Team Foundation Server available, right? Like contributors, builders, project admins, you can even have custom groups. So you can import a group from Team Foundation Server if you have a connection to TFS in place.
Okay, so TFS connection was required, but only from the sense that if I want to get to those groups. Can you show us real quick, hit that new dropdown from TFS. Just hit that real quick, and just show us, I think you'll be able to browse, see the team project level there. Notice I'm bringing in project level
groups. Exactly.
So this is one reason why I think there's some nuances of, I could certainly do this. I could create like a release or deployers group or whatever I want to do. And out in TFS, I could add people to that for my project and bring that group in for the project. But you also, you would be doing that for each team project, wouldn't you? Where there would be a way, and if I was wanting to use AD, for example, is I could create a group out in Active Directory, more of a global thing for the whole product.
Right.
And then instead of working at that team project level, maybe I've only got 6 people in the company, for example, and I just want to add it in AD, drive it with Active Directory, and never worry about a TFS custom group. So you've got some flexibility and options here, just to keep in mind on your scenario.
Yeah, so let me just go ahead and quickly add the contributors group.
Okay.
You'll see that this group now shows up. If I open it, I mean, I can obviously rename it. You see that it created a group specific to release management, right? I mean, I'm just calling it RM Contributors for my Socialite team project.
So it's connected to the TFS group. You're giving it a different display name if you want.
In release management.
If you needed to.
If I wanted to do so, yeah.
Okay.
And you also see that there's this option up here that would let you detach from TFS.
Yeah.
Right. What that would basically do is, I mean, if I detach from Team Foundation Server, if you go into TFS and if you add somebody to my contributors group, that user wouldn't have access to release management.
Okay. So you could detach this from TFS, which makes me think that the group, if I add people over in TFS, then that's somehow going to sync inside of release management those users. But there, we can control that as well, can't we, on how often those refresh?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that can be configured. I'm just going to go ahead and save this. I know there's a lot of settings that we haven't really gotten to yet, but we'll be showing it
as we go throughout the
day. As we go through our demos here. So let me just go into the settings here real quick. and talk about the 80 TFS-based group refresh interval.
Yeah, there it is.
By default, it's zero, which means that it's turned off.
Okay.
But then you can have it look for updates every so often.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, and I've found this out as well. So, you add your TFS group, you bring them in, it's got everybody in there, right? But in essence, it's kind of detached by default because you can add another user out in TFS, it won't come over. And if you're wondering why, you got to crank that interval up. And for demo, I did like 1 minute before, and then the user populates in just fine. For performance reasons, maybe, and for real world scenarios, maybe you're doing it once a day or once an hour or whatever you need, whatever makes sense.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, so let me go back here again. So we looked at, again, some of the basic settings, right? There's a lot more to do here. We'll be looking at stage types and technology types as we go through our demos throughout the day, so we'll be doing all of
that.
Okay.
So to summarize where we're at here, we gave a very brief overview of, a fast-forward overview of DevOps and why release management's important in our first module. Our second module here, we're off the ground from scratch. We've installed and we're beginning, we installed three things. We installed our server, our client, and even a deployment agent, which we're kind of yet to look at yet. And we began a configuration experience, more of, I would say, some of that one-time work, like, okay, connect it up to my Team Foundation server, get the security kind of set up initially. There's a lot more we could have done there, but for the sake of time, we did not. But then we'll eventually now, I think we're going to move into more of the setting up our pipeline and setting up our release paths and some other work there, setting up our servers, our environments, and we'll go on from here.
Sounds good. We'll pick it up in module 2.
Okay.
All right.